So I would categorize John as a person who is practicing awareness. And I would imagine for the people that are listening to this podcast, maybe the common trait they have is they have an awareness of things they don't know and a willingness to be curious about finding answers and solutions and direction to grow in their learning and their understanding and their application, like my friend John.
Let me welcome you to Mindful Leader. My name is Dennis Shaw, and I am a retired elder in the Mountain Sky Conference of the United Methodist Church. Mindful Leader is a relatively new podcast, and I use it to speak to the issues of leadership at the local church. And today, my guest is the Reverend Ken Brown. Ken Brown is an elder in the Mountain Sky Conference. He came to the Mountain Sky Conference about 20 plus years ago or so. And he has served at Broomfield United Methodist and at Trinity United Methodist. Ken is a graduate of the University of North Carolina, and he also has his master's in divinity from Duke Divinity School. And I imagine that on some Saturdays and Sundays in basketball, that creates a little bit of a schizophrenia, but he seems to handle it well. As I indicated in the welcome, my guest today is the Reverend Ken Brown. He is the pastor at Denver Trinity United Methodist. Welcome, Ken. Thank you for having said yes to talk to us about mindful leadership at the local church. Thank you for saying yes.
Thank you, Dennis, for asking. I'm privileged and honored to be with you.
Ken and I exchanged some email traffic, and we had a conversation earlier, and we had some ideas of things we might talk about. And one of the ideas I threw to Ken was the idea of being the pastor of a large downtown metropolitan church, and the idea of how you do that. And I put the word diversity inclusion somewhere in that thing, and Ken said, "You know, that's what I think I'd like to talk about." He said, "I'd like to talk about that." And apparently, quoting from an article that was written on Ken in the Westword, and I'll put the link there in the show notes, Ken made the comment on that article. "From the beginning, I knew that God wanted me to uniquely serve in cross-racial settings. That call happened in 1992. It's very rare for Black people to lead white churches, and is, to me, one of the reasons that as Christians, we're complicit in the race problem." I love that. I love that. You want to talk a little bit about that call element for you and how you experience that?
Yeah, that'd be great because it's morphed into something I never imagined it would, and that's been a career that honestly continues to kind of wake me up each day and kind of strive to be in the space. And it really goes back to like 30 years ago. I was participating in a urban ministry study with other cohorts from across the country in an experience sponsored by the Lilly Foundation. And we would gather in New York twice that calendar year to talk about our experience. So about five or six of us decided one Sunday morning that we wanted to go to the historic Riverside Church in New York. And I had anticipated that this would be kind of a lily white space served by a lily white pastor. And to my surprise, it was not. It was very multicultural. And more importantly for me, they had a Black senior pastor. And Dennis, for the first time in my life, I saw a Black person, a Black man in spiritual authority over and in a predominantly white space. And again, because this is New York, it was multicultural, but it was very clear there was a brother as the spiritual leader there. And God just whispered in my heart, that's what I imagine your life to be. So that was the kind of the alarm that just said, yes, this is a space I want you to explore. This is an indication. This is a calling on your life. And I've been at it ever since.
And both of your appointments in Legacy Rocky Mountain and now Mountain Sky have been to predominantly white churches, first Broomfield and now Denver Trinity.
That's correct. And I think sometimes you expect there to be predominantly white churches in suburban areas just because of the zip codes and honestly the economic wherewithal to live in those zip codes. However, people don't imagine that downtown churches are predominantly white these days. You expect that your downtown churches mirror your statistics in that downtown area. So here in Denver, Black presence is probably 9% in our city, and it's probably 30% when we look at a Latinx demographic. And at Trinity, we do not have that level of representation. And so it became very interesting to a few of us, well, how did this come to be? And is it meant to be? And we've just been imagining what ought to be. And for us, for at least here at Trinity, we landed in a space where we said, you know, we need to be able to mirror as a congregation the composition of this city so that members and visitors feel that their presence with us matters and is seen when they come and worship with us.
And the article in Westward talks about a couple of things that you seem to have done. One was this idea of dinner and dialogue. Is that still something you're doing now there at Trinity?
Well, the dinner and dialogue experience was a specific time where you set aside, it was about 2 months where you have intentional meetings every other week with a curriculum designed for you to explore, lack of a better term, the other. And with these tables, we designed it such that you would have someone in the white community there, someone perhaps from a Middle Eastern community. We had some folks that were the Jewish faith at the table, some non-religious people. And at each table, we had a Black police officer from Denver. So that work had a specific time, dinner and dialogue, where we dialogue, as you would imagine, over dinner. And the fruit of that, Dennis, is to this day, some of the people that make connections in those groups are still in community. So the example would be this past Sunday, one of the police officers that had participated in this process, he shows up 5 minutes before 11 o'clock and says, "Hey, Pastor, I'm in town. I had the Sunday off and I decided to show up here." And he had never been in worship with us before. He participated in dinner and dialogue, but never with us in worship. So he looks around and he recognizes someone that sat at his table 2 years ago, and he sits with her in worship. And for the sake of this story, again, this is a Black police officer in his early 40s, and he's sitting next to a white woman in her 70s, and they had never known each other past, probably wouldn't have crossed one another had they not had like an intentional way to be introduced to each other, and they made it a point to foster a relationship. So yes, the formal part of that is over, but the fruit of it still is something we're savoring these days.
You and I talked before we got on the air. My own personal experience in Salt Lake was that the Black community was extremely welcoming to me. Most of these were National Baptists. They were not Methodists that were there by to a large degree. But I just couldn't get over of how when I arrived, and it was partly based upon my music director was so involved in gospel music there in Salt Lake, and she had a strong relationship with these National Baptist churches. But it was like I was brought into that community and welcomed as a brother. And it was almost like I had to do nothing other than just simply be a pastor. And they went out of their way to make me feel special and welcome and warm. It was one of the highlights of my time in Salt Lake.
Yeah, I'm
So.
glad you had that experience because that tends to be the ethos of Black churches and hospitality. Because I've been serving predominantly white churches for 30 years, my life has been like an ethnography. So I'm immersed in this culture. And what I see with my white parishioners, sometimes when they see guests, even of their own persuasion, they don't go out of their way to be especially hospitable. It's almost as if you just want to respect someone's personal space for their pursuit of faith on that particular morning. And what I try to encourage my white parishioners to think about as we strive to be a place of inclusion that knows no boundaries or no conditions is Black people. Now, again, I'm Black. I'm not speaking on behalf of my entire race. I'm speaking on my lived experience. When I'm in a setting of predominantly white people, it's okay for you to see me. Meaning is you don't need to be color blind, in my opinion. You can be color conscious, and the consciousness is just remembering everybody has a story. And when Black people do have the courage and the willingness to come to these predominantly white spaces, yes, be intentional about welcoming people, be intentional about inviting them to have coffee or lunch. And I think that's a teaching opportunity for us.
One of my favorite movies is Grand Canyon with Kevin Kline and Danny Glover, and about how the accidental bonding that occurs over a broken down car becomes a permanent relationship, and how it, but they both had to be open to the possibility that these two could like each other. These two people from very different backgrounds could like each other.
You're absolutely correct. And you have to have an openness. And at some point, there has to be a conversational starter, and someone has to be intentional about building something and imagining something. And that begins with an openness and with someone taking the first step.
And with that taking the first step element, and I'm just sort of spitballing this, I'm hoping I'm about right. John Common was a member there at Denver Trinity, and he's the CEO of a startup there in Denver, and he has leaned on you to help him with diversity, equity, inclusion kinds of things at the company that he runs. Is that a fair statement of how I think I understand it?
For the most part, yes, he's actually not an active member of our church. He became involved with some of our music programming, and he was a person that experienced in his past some church trauma and just didn't want to sign up to do what we do. That being said, when he participated in our music program, we had a chance to befriend each other. And here's where that relationship started, Dennis. When we first had a conversation about inclusion, diversity, equity, and inclusion, it didn't happen in his corporate office. It didn't happen at my corner office here at Trinity. It happened in his backyard. He invited me to his home. I hung out with John and his wife, Jess, and he says, "Hey, man, just kind of help me understand how I can show up differently as a white man from the South in a company that does global work and impact, and we're not where we needed to be." And I highlight that because that was so significant to me that he invited me to his home and allowed me to just be in that space with him, honestly, as a neighbor and not as two CEOs trying to figure out how we shape the world with our employees. But that's correct. he made that willingness, that step, and we stay in community today with trying to not only support each other in our enterprises, but as personal friends, just reaching out, supporting one another.
So is it fair to say that step one is he saw you as a as an equal, someone that he could potentially share a bond with, but number two, he thought that there was something you could bring to the table that would help him in his leadership. Is that a fair statement?
That is a very fair statement. Yes. So I would categorize John as a person who is practicing awareness. And I would imagine for the people that are listening to this podcast, maybe the common trait they have is they have an awareness of things they don't know and a willingness to be curious about finding answers and solutions and direction to grow in their learning and their understanding and their application, like my friend John.
Well, that's exactly the direction I'm trying to carry this podcast overall for the series I'm doing, plus what I haven't done yet is exactly what you just said, is there's elements of other people's leadership style that you might be able to hear, listen to, see, and say, that idea speaks to me, and I could incorporate that. That could be part of who I am. And it sounds like that's what John perhaps did with you as well.
Yes, it was a gift to me to have that relationship, still is, because it helps me to become aware of my blind spots as well, because folks on the other side of the spectrum, diversity, equity, inclusion, we don't have it all figured out.
No.
How to be in these authentic relationships with the other, and we need to stay engaged as well.
In Genesis, Joseph is having a conversation with his brothers, and somehow, I forgot exactly the preamble to it, but he's talking with his brothers, and he tells his brothers that what they had done of selling him into slavery was for evil. It was done for an evil purpose, but that God had turned it to good. And I want to flip the conversation over to George Floyd a little bit. And I don't ever want to remotely suggest that what happened with George Floyd was good. I don't mean to suggest that. That was evil. But at the same level, it's the fact that how you have, through your leadership, tried to take that evil action, and you, much like Joseph, have tried to turn the awareness of this to good. And by talking to people, sharing with people your observations, your insights, your leadership on that. How did you go about doing that? It was something like I sort of got presented to you. You didn't plan to do it, and all of a sudden it got presented, but you had to lead from there. You had to lead from this surprising place. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, that's a fair statement. And I'm glad you're referencing that story in Genesis. Growing up in the Black Baptist Church, we used to call that 50-20 vision, because it's in Genesis chapter 50, verse 20. So 50-20 vision is what we used to call it. And to that point, as you and I have had this conversation, you know, vision is a work of the heart. Yeah. And when George Floyd was murdered, our downtown church was suddenly kind of drafted into the conversation without seeking it, honestly, thanks to digital presence. So when George Floyd was murdered, at the time at some of our services during the pandemic, we would feature this Black gospel ensemble entitled Spirit of Grace. And some students from CU, African-American students, saw one of our services, and they saw the Spirit of Grace singing, and they saw me preaching. Now, these students had never been inside of Trinity and experienced the congregation, yet because they saw me as a Black preacher at this church online and they saw the presence of Black singers at this church, they assumed, Dennis, that Trinity United Methodist Church was a Black church.
Yeah.
And when I made them aware that we were not, I said, yeah, we're as white as Sweden, if not more. And my friends are the Swedish. Please, that's not offensive. I realize you have your understanding of diversity and inclusion. But that being said, you know, that's the truth. I just told them, like, yeah, we're as white as Sweden, if not more. And honestly, it showed me the power of what digital presentations can make. And when you have people in leadership. So that's how we were drafted in some conversations. I, along with Spirit of Grace, we were invited to be at a memorial service in honor of George Floyd's life. Our attorney general here in the state of Colorado, he was present and he shared words. We had beautiful young people that named the space of grieving the loss of a human being. And literally thousands upon thousands of people just kind of gathered in front of our administrative building for the city of Denver at the Civic Park. It was a very holy moment that night in the midst of some of the most turbulent weeks of downtown Denver.
But you took him to church that night.
We went to church. We went to church. And the beauty of that night is what I recall about it was this moment of just talking about some Jewish understandings of saying the name of God, and in their faith, in the Jewish faith, it sounds like breath. And so we're saying breath, we're saying the name of God when we breathe. And when we no longer can say the name of God, we die. And again, you know how we are as Methodist pastors. We call ourselves bootleg interpreters of Hebrew language. And yeah. I had some of my Jewish friends months later just reminding me that was on point. In fact, I had one of my Jewish friends kind of counsel me on that particular line. But yes, it just kind of thrust our church from being this kind of closed off and embedded community in our tradition to being present in downtown Denver. And we still are trying to find those opportunities to be that authentic community of showing up for people.
Well, I mean, to me, part of the authenticity of the Black community in general is the fact that they find spiritual moments where we as white people sometimes see these as more secular moments. And that part of the Black tradition is that they can find these secular moments and they can make them church moments. They become spiritual moments, and I find it impressive. I love it.
Yeah. Well, and I'm glad you can kind of highlight that and see that, because you remember during that time after George Floyd murdered, we were talking about how America is having a racial reckoning. Did you hear any of that language? People calling it a reckoning. Well, we forget it. The reason you have a Black church is this a response to racism.
Yeah.
There was no need in the Bible or in America to have, quote, a Black church experience. It was birthed out of rejection of us as a people at predominantly white spaces in America. So I think what you saw, and you can appreciate this, and that's why I'm glad you're highlighting this, Dennis, that that Black church experience was a response to racism. And there's some opportunities now that churches, especially in America, we can be more intentional and active in responding to racism when we see it, recognize it, and have the courage to respond to it.
Part of the purpose that I have here with this podcast is to be able to talk to church leaders, clergy, laity, but people that lead in the local church. What would be a piece of wisdom you might offer to probably predominantly white, but to church leaders about from your based upon your own experience, from your own personal experience, what might be some wisdom about how to approach the subject of diversity, equity, and inclusion at the local church?
That's a great question, Dennis, and I think it's a very relevant question today that some faith communities are trying to figure out. And I think the number one lesson I've learned is some of this work we're trying to accomplish in the area of diversity, equity, and inclusion, it is sociology 2.0. It isn't a Sunday school class matter. So I always encourage people to have trained facilitators that have a skill set in creating dialogue with the other. And every time I've hired an outside consultant that has a background in sociology and a skill set in creating dialogue, it's been far more fruitful
Okay.
than approaching this subject matter like it's a Sunday school topic, or having, our world famous book clubs that we have at church where we just pontificate about what we could and should do, usually not having the other in the room when we're having those conversations. So having highly skilled people with facilitation skill sets in sociology has been like the number one learning to do this hard work productively.
Wow. So some if I think it's fair then what I hear you saying is we have to intentionally go find people that are not necessarily part of our community to help us of how to deal with this within our community.
That's correct. Every opportunity I've had to make this successful, it has been a person outside the system, outside the church, outside the congregation that has stepped into this space, typically with a background in higher education in this work. And because of the location of where I've done ministry, I've had that opportunity and privilege to be able to tap into the resources of higher education professionals to help us in this work.
When I got my doctorate of ministry, one of the books that we had to read was Dr. King's early book on his experience at Dexter Avenue in Montgomery, and about how he was called to lead there with that. And he didn't go there with the purpose of leading a movement. He went there as a place to write his PhD dissertation in systematic theology so that he could get his doctorate and maybe head back to the North and be a college professor somewhere. And circumstance changed that. He was surprised even on the day that people elected him to take over the leadership of this black community there in 1954. He didn't seek it out, and it the leadership came to him. Have you in your own experience had these moments where you didn't go seek something out, but the leadership came to you and said, "This is a moment, Ken, where your life experience is relevant, and you need to share that, and you need to lead from your experience." Is that something that you have personally experienced yourself?
I'm recalling, number one, just an appreciation of you telling that story about Dr. King's life because it's certainly been inspirational to me. And as I think about my appointment to Trinity, that would resonate. As you know, I was at Broomfield for 15 years, and to be at a Methodist church for 15 years
Long
is a
time.
substantial achievement. And what some of the people in Methodism may not know, when I reached the 12th year mark of being at Broomfield, I got a call from someone at our board of discipleship in Tennessee, that said, "Ken, you have successfully led a large white church longer than anyone else in our United Methodist system's history." And again, as you know, our history as United Methodists dates back to 1968. Is that it? That's the year? Yeah. So at year 12, I accomplished something that had been done. Again, not the other black folks couldn't have done it. They either retired or became bishop or they BS. It just, it worked out for me. But to your question about feeling like called to come somewhere by someone, I would say our bishop, Bishop Caring, she did that for me in 2018. She was praying about the direction of Trinity Methodist Church here in downtown Denver. She was aware of my work in Broomfield, and it had just been placed on her heart to extend an invitation to me to come be at Trinity. And yes, I'm living that right now. One of those situations where honestly, I wasn't seeking, I wasn't looking for. You knew my setup in Broomfield, Dennis.
It was good. Yeah,
That's
you had a
it
good
was
day.
good. It
It was
was good.
good.
That was a good
You were
run. It
producing
was a
fruit.
great run. I was producing food and you came to visit me there. Yeah. And
I did.
then I come here and yeah, I believe like this moment that I'm in, even though it's the hardest work, Dennis, this is like the hardest work in my 30 years of my career, is like I know I'm called for this moment, this season. I don't know the outcome of how we will pivot moving forward because I tell people Trinity is a 164-year-old startup. We were founded in 1859, and here we are now. Nothing of what we used prior to the pandemic, or we've used for 164 years. We can faithfully, with confidence, use it to move us forward. And so many initiatives we're doing right now are just startup. And the success rate of startups is they mostly fail.
They mostly
But
fail.
that being they mostly fail. But that being said, I'm in that season right now where when you ask me that question of just being called to a space, invited to a space, Bishop Caring reaching out to me, and you can elaborate to your audience who Bishop Caring is. That was the call that came to me in 2018 that leads me to where I am today.
Yeah, Bishop Karen is Bishop Karen Olavido, as she's been the bishop of Mount of what was Legacy Rocky Mountain and Legacy Yellowstone. We became one conference in 2018, just about the time you changed appointments. And she came here from Glide Memorial United Methodist Church, and she's looking to retire in 2024. So yeah. Ken, I normally end up my podcast with sort of o throwing an open-ended question to my guest. Is there anything that you would like that I should have asked that I didn't ask that you'd like to maybe provide some measure of clarification or say, well, Dennis, it'd been great if you would ask about then give me a better question. And I leave this out there for people to hear it, so it's all part of the dialogue. Is there anything that we didn't talk about that you'd wish we had?
No, I think we've covered it pretty decently. I think what I would like to do is just share a kind of action paragraph from our statement of inclusion that we had adopted in 2019. And it has been a compass for us to kind of measure our growth and our work. So, if you don't mind, I'd like to share this paragraph
Please.
so that maybe your audience can reach out to me and we can be in dialogue with them. And more than anything else, it may be something meaningful for them. So, let me share that with you and with your audience. And here's this paragraph from our statement of inclusion adopted June 30th, 2019. Our inclusion knows no boundaries or conditions. Our intentional hospitality welcomes and values all of God's people. We see the image of God in every human face. We welcome people of every race, ethnicity, and country of origin, gender identity, marital status, and sexual orientation, faith, culture, and language. We include people of all ages, levels of education, and physical and mental ability, socioeconomic class, political affiliation, and life experience, shape, size, and appearance.
Wow. So you, when you say everybody's welcome here, you go out and describe who the everybody that's welcome is.
Exactly. It's just not enough to say all are welcome. You need to be intentional about the boxes you want to check as a representation of the kingdom of God.
My daughter's church in Chattanooga has an autistic black gentleman. It's a reconciling church, which means that it's intentionally open to the lesbian, gay, bisexual community. But this gentleman has some autism related issues, but he has a role at the end of every service. And as they have changed pastors, this gentleman continues to have that role. And I asked my daughter about that. She says, that's part of who we are. That's part of who we are. This is him having a role in the service is part of who a St. Elmo United Methodist in Chattanooga is. And they have embraced this idea of all means all, to include people with autism. So, yeah. And I want to say thank you for giving me of your time. I know you've got a hard stop here in a few minutes. You warned me about in advance. I'm going to reserve the right to come back to you another day and talk to you again on maybe a different topic, or come back to this one some more. I think on the topic of diversity, equity, and inclusion, I'm sure you have more to share than we have shared just now. This might be sort of like a little bit of DEI 101, and maybe the next time around we can go to DEI 102 or something. So, but I want to say thank you. I'm going to continue to pull for Colorado University and in football, mainly because I watched the game on Saturday, and I was so impressed with the quality of the job that Deion Sanders did this last Sunday. And it's almost like he's telling the rest of the football community, I've gotten a chance here, and let me show you what I can do. So, yeah. Thank you for your time, and God bless you. For those of you that are regular listeners to this podcast, I would hope that you could find a way to make this a regular recording on your podcast application. I personally use Overcast, but I am registered with iTunes, and you should be able to find it. If you can't find it on your podcast application, do me a favor and send me a note at Dennis, D-E-N-N-I-S, at Mantuan, M-A-N-T-U-A-N, .org. And I will put that email address in the show notes. Ken, thank you very much again for your time. God bless you. And I look forward to talking to you another day.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate the opportunity to share with you. And please invite me back. Let's continue the conversation.
God bless. Thank you very much.